very top of Tzadi Tesam and Aleph. So the Gemara says Tanu Rabbanan. Yesh choletz le'imo misafek, la'achoso misafek, levito misafek. So the Gemara quotes a Tosefta that says that there are scenarios where a person can do chalitza misafek out of doubt with his mother, sister, or daughter. So how does that work exactly? So the Gemara explains, Ketzad, imo v'isha acheres, v'lahen shnei zcharim, v'chazru v'yoldu shnei zcharim b'meichavei, uva v'no shalzo v'nasa imo shalzeh, uv'na shalzo nasa imo shalzeh, v'meisu b'lo barim, zecholetz l'shteyan v'zecholetz l'shteyan, nimt. This is kind of a strange case. All these cases in the Gemara are actually kind of strange, but we'll use the names that Rashi uses just for simplicity's sake. So imagine the following: you have the first case. You have Rachel is married to Yaakov and has a son Yosef. Chana is married to Reuven and has a son Chetzron. Those are the names that Rashi uses. Then each of the two wives, namely Rachel and Chana, have two other sons, but those sons are of indeterminate status. In other words, we don't know who their mothers are. That was the case we mentioned yesterday. Right? They got mixed up at the hospital. Whatever it was, we don't know who the mothers are of the other two kids. So what happens? Yosef, who again, remember, is Rachel's son, marries Chana, and Chetzron, who's Chana's son, marries Rachel, and then each of them die childless. So now, you have these two indeterminate kids who are floating around, who now have to do chalitza, and they're going to have to do chalitza with both women, with both Rachel and Chana. One of them is obviously their mother, but again, we don't know who's who, so they're going to end up doing chalitza misafek with their mother. Then the Gemara says, la'achoso misafek ketzad, imo v'isha acheres sheyoladu shetein So then you have another case, very similar to the previous case, where you're going to end up doing chalitza misafik with your own sister. So imagine you have, again, similar case to what we mentioned before, except that in this case you have brothers who are only paternally related, who come in and marry these girls. In other words, let's say with the same actors we had in the previous case, let's say you had Rachel and Chana, but instead they gave birth to two girls who, again, are of indeterminate status. We don't know who the mothers are. And then you have these paternal brothers who come along, and let's say Yosef and Chetzron's paternal brothers come and marry these girls, and then they die childless. So again, Yosef and Chetzron will have to end up doing chalitza misafik with their sister. And then finally, levito misafik. This case is a little bit different. There's actually two different versions in Rashi what exactly the case here is. But again, to kind of make things a little bit more simple, basically what happens is that let's say you have Reuven's wife and Kalev's wife. Those are the examples that Rashi gives, who give birth to two daughters. And again, we don't know who the mothers are. They got mixed up, so we don't know who the mothers are in these cases. And then you have let's say Reuven's brothers, either two of Reuven's brothers marry the indeterminate status girls, or Reuven's brother and Kalev's brother marry the girls, and then they both die childless. So again, in this type of scenario, you're going to ultimately end up doing a chalitza misafik with one's daughter. Okay, then the Gemara says Tanya, Hayu Rabbi Meir Omer, Ish ve'isha pa'amim shemolidin chamesh umos. You could have a scenario where a man and woman could actually end up giving birth to five different nations. What does that mean exactly? Ketzad? Yisrael shalakach eved v'shivcha menashek. So imagine a guy goes and he purchases is an eved and a shivcha kananis from the marketplace. V'lohen shnei vanim, and they have two sons. V'nis gayer echad, and one of them converts. So nimtza echad ger v'yachad oved kochavim. So in that case, one is a convert and one is a non-Jew. Hit bilon l'shem avdus v'nis giku zelazeh harei kan ger v'oved kochavim v'eved. If let's say he then tovels one of them for the sake of becoming an eved kanani, and then they have relations and have a child, so now you have a ger, you have a non-Jew, and now you also have an eved. Shichreres ha-shivcha uva'aleha ha-eved harei kan ger v'oved kochavim v'evedu mamzer. Then, if let's say he frees the shivcha and has relations with her, or let's say the eved has relations with her, so that's going to create mamzerus, because once you free the shivcha, she's a regular Jewish woman, and as we'll talk about in a second, we assume that if a Jewish woman has relations with an eved, the child is going to be a mamzer. So then the Gemara says, shichrer shneyem v'hi siyon zelazeh, harei kan ger v'ovid kocham v'evedu mamzer v'yisrael. If he freed both the eved and the shivcha, and they had relations, so then the child born from there is just a regular Jew. So the Gemara asks, my kamash malon, as we just noted a second ago in the Gemara, you see from here that when a non-Jew has relations, or I'm sorry, when a non-Jew or an Eved has relations with a Jewish woman, the child is going to be a mom. So this again is a topic that we spoke a lot about back earlier in the Masechta. Okay. And the Gemara says, Tanu Rabbanan, Yesh Mocher Es Aviv Lahagvos Imok Subasa. Kind of a very strange case. You could have a scenario where a person can sell their father into slavery in order to pay off their mother's ksuba. What does that mean? Ketzad? Yisrael Lokach Eved V'Shivcha Min Ashuk V'Lahem Ben. ben. So let's say, again, you purchase an eved and a shivcha from the market, and they have a son. The son is not an eved. The son is a regular non-Jew. The shichrer es ha-shivcha. You then free the maidservant, unsa'a, and then you marry her. The amad v'chasav kol nechasav livna. Then what do? You write all your possessions off as part of the ksuba to her son. So the Gemara says, nimtza zemokher es aviv lahagvus li'imu ksubasa. It turns out that what you've just done, because an eved is your property, you've essentially you transferred ownership of the eved to the non-Jewish son, who happens to be the son of the eved. So the Gemara says, in that scenario, if let's say the husband ends up divorcing the shivcha or ends up dying, so then there could be a scenario where you're going to end up selling your father, who's an eved, back to your mother to satisfy the ksuba. So the Gemara asks, "My kamash malan kula remeir hi va'avda metaltle metaltle mishdabli l'ksuba v'iba yaseima ha'kamash malan avda kimekarka dami." The Gemara draws one of two conclusions from here. Either you can suggest that this Gemara, this halacha, reflects the opinion of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir happens to hold that even metaltle and even movable property, movable objects, are mishdabli l'ksuba, meaning to say that there could be a lien on those properties if you have to pay up a ksuba debt that you owe. So according to Rabbi Meir, I can go and seize any property that you own. If let's say the husband just divorced his wife, or the husband died, and now she goes to the Yorshim to demand the payment for Iksuba, and they don't have any cash or any money on them. So according to Rabbi Meir, she can go and take any assets at all, including an Eved. The other possibility is that this Gemara could even be true according to the Rabbanan, because there's a famous idea that's developed in several places in Shas, that Eved Hukash Lakarka. The idea is that an Eved Kanani is compared to Karka. Everyone agrees that land, the Karka, is Mishtabe Iksuba, that there is a lien on land for Iksuba, so I can go seize your property, your land, in order to pay up Iksuba. There's a machlokas regarding metaltalin. So if you wanted to argue that an eved was compared to karka, then even the Rabbanan would agree that I can go and seize your eved in order to pay up a ksuba. Okay, says the Mishnah. Ha'isha shenis ariv vladah bivlad kalasa. So again, very similar to the Mishnah we spoke about yesterday. Here, you have a woman whose children are getting mixed up. Again, we don't know who the mother is. They're getting mixed up with the children of her daughter-in-law. So higdilu atarovos v'nasu nashim v'mesu. So again, the children grow up, they get married, they die childless. So the Mishnah says, b'nei hakala choltzen v'lo miyabimin shehu safek esha safek. Basically, the Mishnah says that the children who are the vaday children of the daughter-in-law, they must do chalitza. Why? Because there's only one of two options. Either it's eshes achiv, it's your brother's wife, where Yibum normally would have applied, but there's also a possibility that it's eshes achiyaviv, that it's your father's brother's wife, which is an isur d'oraisa, and Yibum does not apply there. However, if you're a vaday child of the zekena, of the grandmother, of the mother in this story, or the mother-in-law in this story, then you can do either chalitza or yibum, because there's only one of two options here. Either you're the brother's wife, in which case yibum applies anyway, or you're eshes ben achiv, which means that it's your son, which basically means that it's your niece, it's your nephew's wife, and we know that the halacha is that you are allowed, in fact, to marry your niece. That it's mutter to marry your niece, again, assuming that the nephew is dead. Once the nephew dies, then there's no longer an iser. Then the Mishnah says, Mesu haksherim hatarovos livnei hazekena choltzen v'lo miyabim in shehu safek eshes achiv ve'eshes achiyaviv. Again, similarly, the Mishnah basically gives the opposite case, the corollary of this, which is that if the Vaday children die, if the children who we know who their lineage is, if those are the ones who die, so now it's going to depend on the children of indeterminate status. So the ones that are the children of the mother-in-law of the grandmother, they must do chalitza and not yibum again, because it's a suffix whether they're their brother's wife or the father's brother's wife. If it was Eishas Achiyav, if the father's brother's wife, then yibum does not apply. Whereas those who are the Vaday children of the daughter-in-law, they can either do chalitza or yibum again for the same reason as we noted a second ago in the Mishnah, because either it's your brother's wife, or even if it's not, it's still going to be your niece, your nephew's wife, in which case once the nephew dies, there is no iser to marry her. Okay, then the Mishnah says, kahenes shenes ariv vlada bivlad shiv chasa. What if you have the following? Let's say you have a woman who's married to a kohen, and you have another woman who's a shivcha who happens to also be owned by a kohen. So now the question is, their children get mixed up. So we're not sure if the children are kohanim or if they're avadim. So the Mishnah says, "Hare ilu ochlim b'tzruma." First of all, they can eat truma. Again, as we'll see, because basically an eved that belongs to a kohen essentially has many of the same rights as the kohanim themselves. So they can eat truma. V'chol k'nchelak echad b'goren. They each get a share of the truma in the granary, which we'll talk about in the Gemara exactly what that means. V'einon metamim l'meis, and they can't be metamim l'meis in case they're kohanim. V'einon nosin nashim being shares. Shtiglos, they can't marry anybody, because if they're Kohanim, so then they can't marry, then they can't marry a Shivcha, and if they're Avad, then they can't marry a regular Jew. So they're kind of stuck in terms of marriage. However, Higdilu Atarovos V'Shichru Zezen Nosen Nashim Ruyos L'Chuhuna. However, once they get older, they could free each other, and then by freeing each other, then they can marry any woman who's otherwise fit to marry a Kohen. Because again, the assumption is one of the kids is a Kohen and one is an Eved, so in other words, just have them free each other, and then whichever one is the Kohen is end up freeing the Eved, then they can end up both marrying women who are fit for Kohanim. Then the Mishnah says, Ve'enam et tamen lemesim, ve'em nitmu enon sofkin har. But again, as we noted before, they can't become tamen lemes in case they're Kohanim, but if they do, they're not going to be chayav malchus, because maybe they're not Kohanim, maybe they're really an Eved. Ve'enon ochlin b'sruma, ve'em achlu enam eshamin karen v'chomesh. Again, the Mishnah says that they can't eat truma in case they're not Kohanim, but if they do, they're not going to be obligated to pay the karen v'chomesh, the principal plus the additional fifth penalty, because again, we don't know for a fact that they're not Kohanim. Ve'enon cholken al hagoren, they don't share in the portioning of the truma on the granary, which again, we'll talk in the Gemara in a second what that means. Umochrin es truma v'hadamim shalohen. However, they can sell truma and they can keep the profits. Ve'enon cholken b'kadshe hamikdash, they don't get a share of the karbanos that are apportioned in the base hamikdash. Ve'en nosdin lehem kadshim. Ve'en motzien shalohem midehen. They also don't take a share of the karbanos in the mikdash. But on the other hand, we also don't take it out of their possession, which again, we'll see in the Gemara exactly what that means. But basically, you know, if they end up taking a share of the karbanos there, or the hides of the karbanos, they're also entitled to that. Ufturim min hazra umin halichayim min hakeva. They're also exempt from what we call the matnos kahuna, right? Usually there's these different types of parts of the animals, the jaw, the foreleg, and one of the stomachs of the animal that you have to give to the kohanim as part of matnos kahuna. So these people, because they're suffic, whether they're kohanim, so it's not enforceable. You can't force them to give matnos kahuna. Maybe they themselves are really kohanim. Uvechoru yehi roa ad sheyistayev. And if they have an animal which is a bechor, so they have to let it graze until it develops a mum. If the animal is a regular animal without a mum, so then you have to have that animal given and eaten by a regular Kohen, and since these people are only Suffolk Kohanim, so you can't do that. So you wait until it develops a mum, and then you can redeem it, and then they could keep the animal for themselves. And then finally, the Mishnah says...
They can't do it.
What was that? But that's kind of like the almost like the least significant thing here. You know, we're talking about these other halachas that affect Mi'ila and Karbanos. Those things are a little more severe. And then the Mishnah ends off and says, "V'nosen ala chumri kohanim b'chumri yisrael." This we're going to talk a lot more about on tomorrow's daf. But the Mishnah says that we basically treat them l'chumra in all directions. So they're kohanim when it's more machmir, and they're non kohanim when it's more machmir. Which again, tomorrow we'll talk about exactly what that means. Okay. So the Mishnah says, "Mesu aksherim ela hanach mishum di'aruvla havelu hupsulin." So the Gemara asks that textually the Mishnah was referring to the children of the the children who got mixed up as ksherim. So the question is, why are they ksherim? It's not, in other words, they're not, who says that they're good people? It's just that they're children of definitive status. So the Gemara says, you're right, Amar Apapa Ema Umesu Havadai. The Mishnah really should have said that it's the children of definitive status. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're ksherim or not ksherim. It just means that we know what their status is. Okay. Then the Mishnah said, Livnei Hakala Echad Choleitz Davka Michlatz V'Hadar Yabume Avol Yabume Bereishalo Dekapaga Bivamalashak. This is a point that we've already referenced several times this week, which is that... which is that when the Mishnah talks about the fact that you have to do chalitza and then yibum, in the case where you have these children of indeterminate status that got mixed up, the children of the mother-in-law and the daughter-in-law, so the Gemara says you have to do chalitza before you do yibum, because if you do it the other way around, if you do yibum first, there's a chance that you may end up marrying a woman who requires yibum from her actual yavam. Again, as we pointed this out yesterday as well, if let's say you end up picking the wrong woman to do yibum, which is not really your sister-in-law, and you end up marrying her, so then that's a violation of an isser d'oraisa of Vamalashuk, of Losia Isha Sames, Hachutza Liyaj Zar. The Gemara derives, as we spoke about this already a few weeks ago, from Pasuk and Parashas Kiseit, say that if there's a woman who requires Yibam, you can't just go marry her until she herself either does Yibam or Chalitza. So if she ends up, if you end up picking the wrong woman and you do Yibam with her and she hasn't really done a real Yibam or Chalitza yet, that's going to be a problem. So therefore, Chalitza has to be done first. Okay. Then the Mishnah said, Kahenes Shenesarev, Chelek Echabshita. So when the Mishnah said that when the sons of the Eishes Kohen and the Shivcha come to get a truma at the granary, what the Mishnah really meant to say was that they're only entitled to getting truma if they come together. If they come together, in other words, only if the Eishes Kohen or the Kohen and the Eved come at the same time, then they can both get truma. So the Gemara explains: Tanan keman da amar ein cholkin truma leEved ela imkein rabo imo. Disanya ein cholkin truma leEved ela imkein rabo imo. Divri Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yosi Omer Yachol. So the Gemara presents the following machlokas. According to Rabbi Yehuda, the only time that a person who is an Eved or a Shivcha of a Kohen is entitled to taking Truma is if they come together with the Kohen, whereas according to Rabbi Yossi, in other words, the Eved or Shivcha can just turn around to the person who's apportioning the Truma and say, listen, if I'm a regular Kohen, then I'm entitled to Truma anyway on my own, you know, because of my own status. And even if I'm the Eved or Shivcha of the Kohen, I'm still entitled to Truma because that's the halacha. An Eved or Shivcha of a Kohen is also entitled to Truma. So what was the issue here? In other words, why was Rabbi Yehuda so insistent to not give Truma to the Eved unless he came specifically with the Kohen? So the Gemara explains, the issue was that in the community of Rabbi Yehuda, if they saw a person being given truma, that was an automatic assumption that that person was a kohen. They used to let him duchin because of that. They used to treat the person like a kohen. So if you see a guy getting truma, and you're going to say, "Oh, that guy must be a kohen." So then of course you can't give truma to an eved or shivcha unless the kohen who's the master is there. Because otherwise, people are going to come to the mistaken conclusion the person is really a kohen. Whereas in Rabbi Yossi's community, they never used to do that. They never used to say, "Oh, just because a guy is getting truma, that automatically makes him a kohen. He could be an eved. He could be a shivcha. Whatever the case is." So the Gemara says, because of that, that's why Rabbi Yossi was much more lenient, whereas Rabbi Yehuda said, that the Eved or Shivcha must come together with the master in order to be entitled to getting the Truma. Okay, then the Gemara says, Tanya, Amar Rabbi Elazar bar Tzadok, miyamei lo he'ati ala edus echad, ve'helu Eved l'chuhuna al pi. So the Gemara says that Rabbi Elazar bar Tzadok said that the only edus I ever gave ended up leading to making an Eved into a Kohen. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? Helu salka da'itach, hashta ve'hemten shol tzadikim in HaKadosh Baruch Hu mevi takala al yadan. Tzadikim There's a famous idea from the Gemara in the beginning of Chulin that Hashem does not allow even the animals of righteous people to come about to do Averos. So Kal v'chomer, how could Hashem allow a tzaddik like Rabbi Elazar bar Tzadok to do an Avera? How could Hashem allow it that Rabbi Elazar would mistakenly make someone into a Kohen who's really an Eved? So the Gemara says, you're right. Ela'ima bikshu lahalos Eved l'chunapi. It meant that Rabbi Elazar was about to, that he wanted to appoint someone as a Kohen based on the fact that he was eating Truma, but then eventually he realized his mistake and he backed down. And the Gemara says, Chazaba Asher de Rabbi Yossi, va'azav asher v'asher de Rabbi Yehuda, because he saw in the location of Rabbi Yossi the guy was eating Truma, and he wanted to go and testify in the location of Rabbi Yehuda that the person was a Kohen. But again, remember, as the Gemara just pointed out earlier, according to Rabbi Yehuda, because they used to appoint people as Kohan and based on the fact that they were eating Truma, so Rabbi Yehuda's standards were much higher. If you saw a guy eating Truma in Rabbi Yehuda's in Rabbi Yehuda's locale, that was a pretty good indication that the guy was a Kohen, because they used to appoint people as Kohanim. Whereas in Rabbi Yossi's locale, that wasn't a proof of anything, because they didn't used to appoint people as Kohanim based on the fact that you were eating Truma. Okay. Says the Gemara, Tana Rabbanan, Asara in Cholken Lehem Truma Beveis HaGarnos. There are 10 types of people that you don't give them Truma publicly in the granary. Ve'eluhein, Chere Shote V'Katan, so a person who's deaf-mute, who has some sort of a mental incapacity, or a person who's a Katan. Tumtum V'Androgynous, as we've spoken many times about in the past, right? A person who's a Tumtum, where again, there's skin covering the genitalia, or they're androgynous, or they're basically a hermaphrodite. Ve'ha'eved, ve'ha'isha, ve'ha'ara, ve'ha'tame, a person who's an Eved, a woman, a person who's an Arel, right? A person who doesn't have a bris mila, a person who's tamei lemei. Vinose Isha She'ena Hogenesla, or Kohen who married a woman that he wasn't supposed to marry, let's say a Grusha, for example. Vihula Mishagrin Lehem Levateim Chutz Mitame Vinose Isha She'ena Hogenesla. However, in all of these cases, you can privately send them Truma to their house, except in the case of a woman, or in the case of someone, except in the case of a person who's Tame, or the case of a person who married someone that he wasn't supposed to marry. So the Gemara explains, Bishlam Acherish Otivakatan Lav B'nei Dayanin. So I understand why you can't publicly give Truma to Acherish Otivakatan, since they're not B'nei Das, it's not befitting to give them truma in public. Tumtum yandroganus nami bria bifnei atzmanin. It also makes sense why you can't publicly give truma to a tumtum or an androgynous, because they're considered to be like an independent entity. It's considered to be like almost degrading to the truma. Evan nami dilma ase la asuke mi truma liyuchsin. Again, going back to the Gemara's earlier discussion, if I see an Evan getting truma, I'm going to assume that he's possibly a kohen. Arel v'tamei mishum de meise. It's also considered disgusting for a person who's an arel or someone who's tamei to get truma. No se isha she'ena hogenes lo mishum kenas. It also makes sense why a kohen who married a woman that he wasn't supposed to marry, Kohen marries a Grusha, why he can't get Truma in public, because that's considered a penalty. But Ella Isha my time alone, why can't a woman, let's say an Ashes Kohen, why can't she take Truma publicly? So the Gemara says, Pligi bar Rav Papa v'Rav Huna b'Rei d'Rav Yehoshua, Chadam Mishum Grusha, v'Chadam Mishum Yichud. Either it's because we're afraid that in the event that she ends up getting divorced, assuming that she's also not a Bas Kohen, she's going to end up, you know, basically forfeiting her rights to eat Truma, so we don't want to have a scenario where she may continue to eat Truma on this mistaken impression that she's still allowed to continue eating. Or the other possibility possibility, says Maria, it's simply a yichud issue that if she goes into the granary by herself, she may be alone with the guy who's who's distributing the truma. So asks the Gemara, Mai benayu, ika benayu beidari de makari lamasav lashchiche behu inche inami de merachik ushchiche ba inche. So the Gemara says either the nafkamina is if she goes to a granary that's close to the town, but there's nobody there. So in other words, everyone knows that she's a grusha, but on the other hand, there's no one there, so there's still a yichud problem. Or the reverse, she goes to a granary that's very far away where no one knows that she's a grusha, but there are people there, so there's no yichud issue. Then finally, the Gemara says, "V'chulan mishagrin lahem levaten chutz mitame v'nosa isha she'ina hogenes lo aval arel mishagrin olay my time amishum da'anis." So why is it that I'm allowed to privately send truma to an arel? So the Gemara says that's because that's beyond his control. This is the classic case we spoke about earlier in the Masechta of, let's say, a guy had multiple brothers who had died from getting a bris milah because they were hemophiliacs. So the reason why the guy doesn't have a bris milah, it's not his fault. It's considered a sakana. So therefore, you would be allowed to send him truma. So asks the Gemara, "Tame nami ha'anis? What about a guy who's tame? Guy who's tame is also, presumably beyond his control." So the Gemara says, "No, high nafish unsev, high la nafish unsev." The Gemara says that the guy who's in arel because his brothers are hemophiliacs, that's a really serious type of an onus. That's an onus that you can't do anything about. A guy who's tummy, he could be a little bit more careful about not becoming tummy lemis.